Orson Welles,
D.W. Griffin,
Buster Keaton,
Lisa Jennings, Agnes Barda, Alain Resnais,
Catherine Bigelow,
John Hughes, Federico Fellini, Steven Spielberg,
Robert Altman. Jumpstart Cinema.
Presented by New Filmmakers LA.
Hey, I'm Pluma Bennett, cinema scholar and co-host of Jumpstart Cinema.
And I'm Varda Barkar, filmmaker and board vice chair of New Filmmakers Los Angeles.
Today, as our filmmaker guest, we have with us Christina Jun, director of Search History, the short film from the upcoming New Filmmakers Los Angeles screening event we think you must see. Christina, thank you for coming on our podcast.
Hi, you said my name right.
Christina Jun, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Where were you born and how did you get into directing?
So I was born in Madrid, Spain.
Oh, yeah.
Which most people are really surprised by because I'm Korean American. But I was born in Madrid because my dad was getting his master's. He teaches Spanish literature and culture and film and art in Seoul. But he was getting his master's in University of Madrid.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
I love Spain. Yeah. It's a really great country.
Yeah. I've been back to Madrid once since we lived there for 3 years when I was a baby. I was like 20, like early 20s or something like that. But I obviously don't remember too much of it, but it was so beautiful. It was really nice. Yeah.
So your parents are also Korean American?
Mm-hmm. So both my parents are Korean. Well, my dad's Korean. My mom, we moved here when I was 4-ish. So I'm first generation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Some might say half.
Yeah.
Some say half.
Because you weren't born here.
Exactly. Because I wasn't born here, but I was young enough that I was basically raised.
Yeah. Because I mean, 3, you're not going to have too many memories of anywhere else.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
So how did you get into directing?
I got into directing kind of, it's interesting that my trajectory wasn't direct, but it was actually pretty direct. I studied creative writing in Chicago, and but in Chicago, the theater scene is so vast and it's so deep. So I fell in love, and so I decided I wanted to get into theater and perform and things like that. So I moved to New York, and I trained for theater performance.
Right.
And then I spent a bunch of
years. Where
did
you train?
American Academy.
Okay.
It's a 2-year program in New York.
Yeah.
And it's very old school, old New York kind of, training. And so I did that for a while, like 6 years or so.
Wow.
Yeah. And but I was writing films and making these crappy movies with my friends. And they were like, I don't know. I think there came a time where I think you as an artist question kind of why you're making your art, and it's a very simple question, but I think when you really dig into it, it made me question, what kind of art do I want to make and for who and what do I want to say, and what kind of impact do I want to attempt to make. So when I asked that question to myself, I realized I really wanted to create content more than interpret content.
Right,
Which
is what acting is.
And so that got me to shifting to writing and directing. And then I went to my MFA program at USC. And then, that's how I got here. So it's like not totally direct, but it like kind of is,
It all connects.
It does connect.
It makes sense.
Yeah, there's a journey.
I think so.
And I wanted to ask you kind of about your experience doing Search History.
Search History was such a riot. So basically the idea came from my friend that I met at my MFA program. She's another Korean American filmmaker. And we became obviously very good friends during school. But when we left, we kind of looked at each other and said, let's make something that is just so unapologetically what we want to say and how we want to say it. And so we talked about the themes that we wanted to talk about. And I think Search History, to me, what it's about is exploring what Korean American history is, you know, because it's not quite, it's like this weird, awkward center of a Venn diagram.
Right.
So it's not like American, it's not Korean, and it's a little dissociated. So we wanted to talk about, I guess, that search and that disconnection that we feel. But in the craziest way, just with our humor and with paying homage to like what we think is like history for as filmmakers.
I really love the sequences, the kind of the flashbacks to what they imagine with the grandmother was like. I watched a little bit of because one of my friends is really into it, a little bit of a kind of Korean dramas and Japanese dramas, and it kind of reminded me of that. But I also like how it was so different. Mm-hmm. At some point it was almost like really very old fashioned, like almost like film from back then. And then one time it is like a soap opera, kind of Korean soap opera, and other times it's like something different. I kind of liked how it shifted and felt like that.
We just went all out. We did a Kurosawa and we did a Korean drama. And we wanted to squeeze a Wong Kar-wai, but we just, in terms of like the structure of the film, we were like, we should let this go. It hurt to let it go, but we did.
So how did you come up with the whole Japanese, you know, born the kid who was born to, you know, well, sort of, I guess he was how did that whole thing happen? I don't want to give too much away,
right?
I mean, is that something of in the four, because he was saying the Korean American experience, is that something you think about, or that is somehow part of the history that needs to be remembered? Or
I think it is, I think what we wanted to express is a part of history that we never even adopted. You know, because I have an idea of the Korean War, but it's so disconnected to me. It's so far from me. Right. And it's what I see on television or, you know, like news clippings or whatever.
Or in history books.
On history books.
Yeah.
But when I think about it, my mom actually lived through it. Like, my mom lived through it, you know. And it's actually very close to me, but I don't recognize it as that. And so, so I guess it's kind of shuffling through our ideas of what it is and actually getting to how it really affects us as individuals, you know. So I guess that's what we were trying to portray.
So I'm also curious about the whole notion of secrets and the is that something
I love the aunties too. I really love the protectors of the grandmother. I like those. They're fun characters.
It's funny because so much of this film is such an inside joke between Elisa and I. Because we grew up, we're almost the same age. She grew up here and I grew up on the East Coast. And when we got together or like met up in our MFA program, we found so many commonalities, my mom's like that. My God, my dad would never talk about that kind of thing, you know. And so we were kind of exploring the idea that I think a lot of Asian American parents don't tell you certain things, not because they are maybe a little closed off, but their focus is to protect you. Really, it's because it's about you and it's not about them, right? Mm. So I think it's a form of like love and sacrifice that I think first generations or Korean Americans don't quite understand until they do. You know, I don't know if that makes sense.
That makes sense. And how do you decide of like podcasting as the vehicle of them kind of discovering all these things? Is it?
That was also like another inside joke, because we, as filmmakers, we want to explore Korean American history,
right?
And we want to tell the story, but sometimes we have to always toe the line between whose story are we telling and for what benefit, you know? So that was something that's really, I think, personal to me and Elisa, because, we want to tell the story of where we come from and our families, but what's that line of, like, exploiting it,
right?
You know? Mm-hmm. So that's something that we actively are very conscious of when we pursue a story.
So how about the casting? I thought that the lead woman was amazing.
Jenny?
How did you find her? And the whole cast, everyone was great. Yeah. She was exceptionally amazing. Yeah. Everyone was quite good.
I just remember Ginny walking in the room, and she just like carries herself that way. That's who she, you know, who she is. And I think as a filmmaker, when you picture a character, whether it's through script or just, you know, ruminating, she walked in and she I don't know, brought so much more, and also in a line to what we, the tone and the character. But also she herself, because she's Korean American, she knows exactly all the nuances and the, you know, culturally she really understands. So yeah, our cast is all Asian American except the Alana,
right? The best friend,
yeah, Bethany. And the casting wasn't as hard as I thought it was. I actually thought it was going to be quite difficult because there a lot of them are bilingual and, like, you know, and certain ages and things like that. But I think we lucked out because we reached out to the Asian American filmmaking community,
yeah,
made a lot of calls and said, hey, let's pull the candidates and bring them in. And yeah, so I think that was really like a work of a village, yeah, you know, if I can say that.
What about the style, like the approach of it? It seems it's almost got like a new media. I mean, it's something, you've got those traditional flashbacks, mm-hmm, but then it has, you know, like these zippy kind of effects and flat, you know, certain kind of cutting that has a very almost, you know, like a web vibe.
Yeah. I wanted to approach this comedy with, I guess, a sense of, I don't want to say urgency. I don't think that's the right word. I just wanted to approach this with, I know, a sense of like originality, I guess, because I think traditionally, and I think this is generalizing too much, but comedy can be heightened so much with the nuances of film,
right.
I think. And I wanted to make the tone slightly heightened. It's in our reality, but I wanted to heighten it a little bit and make it feel a little more, like it's got like superpowers almost, you know, like the characters almost have a superpower, you know. And so I wanted that kind of blanket over it, you know.
We've never asked this question, but I'm kind of curious, Paloma, why did you decide to select that film amongst all the films?
Well,
I'm kind of curious about all your selections.
First of all, I thought it was really hysterical. I thought it dealt with some really cool issues, and also I think it did what it was trying to do, if that makes any sense. I took, when I was in high school, we had a filmmaking class. Mm-hmm. I was very lucky, and we would all like do our own little films, right? And the teacher, Mr. Wishart, would ask us, is this film doing what it's supposed to do after we've seen it?
Mm.
And to me, I don't know if that makes any sense. And to me, it's like, this film is doing what it's trying to do. I don't know if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah,
or that's radically crazy, but yeah, that's, yeah, I don't know if that makes any, yeah.
No, it makes so much sense because, I remember it back in the day when I didn't know anything, and now I know like 1% more, but I realized
that's what's so great about filmmaking.
Yeah.
You never know it.
Yeah. But I think intention is kind of everything.
Yeah.
Right. I realized you have to set that intention and then let that be like the compass, and hopefully, like you're saying, at the end you look back and you can say, oh, it's doing what I intended it to do.
What is your must-see feature film, in other words, a feature film from any country or era that you think listeners need to watch?
Oh my goodness. That's the hardest question.
I know.
I don't ever have a favorite movie, to be honest. But I do have films that you always go back to, right? Can I name two?
Yeah, you can name as many as you want.
Yeah.
So it's not that much. It's a lot easier.
Exactly, yeah. Well, I mean, people have listed, I think, five at some point.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So,
and no one is able to name one film.
Yeah, nobody's named one film so far. Or even, so two is actually pretty normal. Yeah.
I think, then I'll name three.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I think I watched a film. I was a little late to it. Have you guys seen A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night?
I think that's one of the Iranian kind of vampire one.
Yes, that's right. I love that film.
Yeah,
that's a good
one.
I watched it, and it just, something clicked in my brain where I just thought, Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, no, I do know what you mean.
Yes, of course this can happen.
Yeah. You know?
And I realized it was like a self-reflection of, oh, film is so fluid.
Yeah.
Film is so redefinable at any moment. And we actually do have that agency.
Yes.
And so that film, it like really blew my mind. Another film is, have you guys seen Samsara, the documentary?
Yes. That was the one about, it's Buddhism, about, it's about a state of being. Mm-hmm. You can describe it.
Yeah. It's just, I think it took them 4 years, I want to say, to film. And they traveled around the world and basically put these, it's unfair to call it a montage, but it's just a film of, you know, different images through their travels. And I watched it at the dome, at ArcLight, by myself. I was like the only person in the audience.
Wow, and, that's amazing.
This is like super, you know, brainy to say, but I was watching it and I've never been more conscious of the fact that film is kind of a two-way thing.
Yeah.
There's a presentation of it, but there is the reception of
it. Yes, yeah. It's a mirror almost, like kind of like...
Yeah.
That's what, at least in film studies, we kind of talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Reflection back, and then you're reflecting back. Society, well, in the way of society reflecting it, and the society's being influenced as well.
Yeah. And so I was watching it, and I just told myself, never forget that the audience is actually a collaborator, 100% in the process of storytelling, because they're the ones who watch it and shape it.
Yeah.
And then that is in itself something else. Yeah. You know? And so that movie blew my mind. And then this is like so different, but another movie I keep going back to is I, Tanya. It's like embarrassing how many times I've seen
it. It's brilliant.
It is really brilliant.
It's so good.
I would like to watch that again. Yeah. Such a satisfying experience.
It is.
So satisfying.
It was. I mean, I was almost falling off my seat when the first time I saw it.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to hear why you guys love it. But I love it because it's just so unapologetic.
Yeah.
And it's so good with, I think the tone is like perfect for what it's trying to do. So that movie I just kept going back to and back to for so many of my other films, you know?
I was gonna say, I think that Samsara was influenced. Did you ever see Kayana Squatsi?
Yes, yeah.
I think it was influenced by that filmmaker. It's a similar kind of structure, it's different but similar.
Are they both Ron Frick? I feel like maybe
who
Ron Frick.
No. The other one, Godfrey Reggio, did Kayana Squatsi.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
When you were just thinking about the film that's really blown your mind, I was thinking, I didn't select it, but the film that really blew my mind when I was an undergrad at UC Santa Cruz, I think it was a history class, the film history class, was The Last Picture Show. I don't know quite why. I mean, because I've seen other films that are really talented, but for some reason, really amazing. For some reason, I saw that and it just like blew my mind. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to. I mean, I know that's kind of. I mean, it's in some ways I don't even know why it blew my mind. Even still, mm-hmm. But for some reason that one really blew my mind. I actually met him. That was pretty cool. But
yeah, Peter Bogdanovich.
Yeah, but it was. I think it was the way they told the story, the quietness of it.
Mm.
It just was pretty amazing.
Yeah. I agree.
Picture Show.
Yeah.
Have you seen it, The Last Picture Show?
I don't think so.
Oh, you?
It's really amazing. Show. It's about kind of this, well, it's about a small town, but of high school students, really, who there's this, like, art kind of movie theater, and it's closing down, it's the last showing of it. And it's kind of about the ending of, like, I think, like, kind of an era.
Oh, okay.
It's really about, like, the end of, I think, kind of, like, all-American dream in a weird way, or all-American Western, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I would say.
That's super cool.
But it's really amazing. It's like all in black and white and really stylized, but not, I don't know. It's hard to say.
The Quiet. Last Picture Show.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Check it out.
I will check it out. That sounds good.
Okay, so now we're there. What is your dream project moving forward?
Man, that's...
You can make any film you want to. What would it be?
I feel like that's an even harder question. I don't, I would love to make a film that, okay, I don't actually know what this looks like, but talking about intention, right?
Yeah.
Something that I experienced with Search History. So I have a stepfather who is not Korean. So they would watch it simultaneously, and he would be laughing at certain things and she wouldn't. And so I think that that makes sense, because we made this for a Korean-American audience. And of course, there's the peripheral, right?
Right.
I don't really know, honestly, what this actually would look like. But I would love to make a film where it's more inclusive. Like, I would love to make a film where my dad and my mom could actually watch it, and they would both get the same cultural context and the same jokes and the things like this, even if it is like from their own perspective,
right?
You know, I know that's like kind of a pretentious answer, but I don't really know quite what the story itself would be. But I don't know, I think that's a big reason why I do want to make films, because I think film in itself is a different language.
Yeah.
And yeah, it would be really great to find a story that can bridge, you know, cultures.
Yeah,
I know,
definitely.
It's a big...
Well, I think great films do that inherently, because I think really great works of art in general speak to this, the human condition or the state of being that is shared.
Yes, yes.
Where we all, you know, aside from all our differences, you know, aside from our different opinions, our judgments, the way we look, there is this larger reality, you know, that contains it all, that we all share. And this consciousness, I guess it is, that we all have somewhere. Sometimes we get lost, and we're not in touch with it. But I think we all do have it. And I think that great art and great films and TV and whatever, they kind of wake, we can meet there. It's a meeting place for us all.
Yeah.
Because it connects us to this larger understanding of ourselves.
I completely agree with that, because, you know, I pursue Asian American film and characters and story and community, but really the trick isn't to actually focus on the community itself. It's to focus on the human experience within that character and within the community, because it's always universal, I think, you know. And so, you know, if Search History is about a Korean-American girl trying to reconnect, it's really just a person looking for herself, her identity. And right now, with this film, it's colored with Korean-American and female and, you know, 2019 and things like that. But that's just the color, the intention and the core of it, I think. It is exactly what you're talking about. So, yeah, I mean, my dream film would hopefully do this, you know? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Well, I think that's a really noble aspiration.
It's a hard one, but, you know.
It is hard. Well, filmmaking is very hard.
Yeah, it's really hard.
It's so hard, isn't it? But that's, I think, part of the reason. Those of us who do it, I think we just really love the challenge.
Yeah, I think so. And the growth, the constant growth.
Yeah,
is exactly. Very attractive, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, I want to thank you, Christina, for taking the time to talk with us about your film, Search History.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, sure. It's great to have you.
Yeah.
It was a great conversation. Okay.
Our classic film for this month is Moon, directed by Duncan Jones, starring Sam Rockwell, and Moon was released in 2009.
Paloma, why did you select Moon as our classic must-see film?
Well, let me first summarize what it is about. In general, I don't want to give too much away. Sam Bell is this kind of, I guess, I don't know if he's an engineer necessarily, but he's been working for 3 years by himself at the helium-3 mine in the far side of the moon. He meets a clone of himself. And the film kind of explores what's what is real and what's fake, you know, so kind of the sort of bad things fueling capitalism. It had this 2001 Space Odyssey feel to it, this isolation that you know, both 2001 Space Odyssey has and Moon has, of people, this one person kind of by themselves with this kind of robot-like creature, this called Gertie, who was played by Kevin Spacey. And he did an excellent job by that. But I really loved how it explored this sort of, the concept of perception and memories. And I think there's also really clever the way they play with color, where I think, where you see where all the bad things happen was this kind of like where the original car, and I guess not car crash, but the original kind of solar vehicle crash was, you know, outside of the moon. So everything's very, you know, very dark and very kind of gloomy. Mm-hmm. And then the space station is very bright and shiny and this kind of perfection looking thing. And then the video cover, the little video pad they have is like kind of this bluish color. It's kind of off color. So it's this kind of separation and kind of grainy as well. And the way they film it is you can't really see the faces very well. They're kind of far away, but you can still see he's communicating with this kind of, I guess, Skype-like thing. The Gertie, of course, is very different from Hal. That's right, Hal. He's very nurturing and very loving, as we were talking about before. He helps them, even though he's programmed by, quote-unquote, this corporation. He's still the one who kind of keeps them alive and helps them, like, spread the word to everybody else about what's going on.
It's true. And you know what's interesting is I didn't really think of it as I was watching the film, but as you were giving a description, I realized that, you know, and this connects with what we were talking about with Christina.
Yeah.
About what it means to be human and films that kind of explore that and, you know, the universal themes that we can all connect with no matter what our differences are.
Right.
And in this case, what's interesting is that here you have these two clones.
Right.
Who, you know, somehow you still feel they're human, even though you know, once you discover that they are clones, they still have so many traits that are human.
Right.
And then you know, this computer, like, this computer has seems to have more compassion and emotion and feeling.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like a machine with a smiley face than humans do.
Yeah.
Even. So this whole notion of like what it means to be human and even like what our existence means. It made me feel had that feel like maybe this is why you found it so powerful. And this is because I was kind of wondering, like, why did she select this one? I looked at the other films that, like, District 9 was another film from that time.
It was, yeah.
And,
it's not Sun, but Solar or something like that. There was another big one, big space one where it was, they're going to the Sun to save Earth.
And, you know, the Fox, Mr. Fox.
Oh, but that's Mr. Fox and...
Yeah, that was on the same.
That was the same. 2000. Yeah,
so there was some other Fantastic Mr. Fox. Which was a great film.
A Wes Anderson film. One of his best films, I think.
Exactly.
A really incredible film, actually.
Exactly. It was the same time. So I was like, why did she choose this one? But I think what this does, that is very rare to find in films, is it literally makes you question your own, like, what it means, like, why are you? What does it mean to be a human being?
Yeah.
And like, how do we relate to each other? And how are we related to each other and how we're related to machines and how we're related to, you know, think like what is existence? It's very unnerving. Almost.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, actually that's what I think is really powerful about science fiction. I think also I picked it partly because I think, you know, science fiction, I think does some really great things about humanity, but also I think this film shows you how just because it's science fiction doesn't mean it has to be broad and big. You can also have these very small and personal films. I mean, it's really only like, two actors there. I mean, Kevin Spacey's not even really there. I mean, he's recording, but I'm sure he's not actually on set then. But it's really just Sam.
Yeah.
By himself.
Yeah.
And he even is, I think that's really impressive. I mean, I'm actually a fan of his. I think he does really great character work. But I think what's amazing how he played clones who were, all had the same memories, but yet the two clones were very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
Probably because they were different parts. Like, he was in the end of his 3-year cycle. I'm calling him Sam 1, even though he's not Sam 1, of course. I think there's been others before him. And he's sort of like, he's almost like a doddering old man. And then there's Sam 2, who's very logical and very kind of like going through the motions, exercising, doing all the things they're supposed to be doing to keep herself busy. And also very sharp and very, like, at first looks down upon the other Sam, because he's not able to be as fast and sexually anymore. Mm-hmm. But I think they both had this compassion, this willingness to sacrifice for the other, even though they're both, quote-unquote, copies. Like, Sam, the first Sam 2 is like, you should go to Earth because you have this compassion, you have this really deep connection with the daughter that's the original Sam had, who's now like I think 16 or 17 or something like that.
Oh.
Which they show a recording of her talking to him.
Okay.
And then Sam Wen's like realizes, you know, he's dying, and that he won't be able to help anybody. He might be able to see her for a little bit, but he wouldn't be able to help through the word of what's happening up in the helium-3 mining station, and so he sends him down. And so there's this, what I was, what this really deep compassion and love throughout this, and this idea of that, you know, of what is humanity and what is being human and what is being real. And I think also, I think it's, it kind of really deals with what happens, like, when the human life doesn't mean, when money means more than human life. Because if you really think about it, like, economically at least, like, the original Sam died because he was in this car crash or this vehicle crash. And the company's like, I don't want to train a new person. So we're just gonna have all these clones sent up there. They're creating something just to work, never to live, never to be on Earth ever again.
Yeah.
So even though they had this hope to see their family again, they'll never see their family again. So it's about the moment was like, they're like machines.
Yeah.
Rather than people to them. And I think, though, yeah, of course, science fiction, of course, that's not happening because that's not, you know, reality. You know, first of all, we clones are really heavily regulated, but also we don't have that capability. But there are people who are treated like,
oh yeah,
this cogs in the machine, factories. And
you're right.
So I think it really is about, I think it's also really about capitalism and the danger of it.
Yeah.
Of us becoming like you know, like a Foucault, and the concept of the biopolitics that we're created to be consumers and to create, and then and then create more consumers.
Yeah.
Become machine-like. And that's what Michel Foucault writes about. Uh-huh. In his kind of, I think it's a book about biopolitics.
Yeah.
But it's really kind of about that as well. And I think that's really important.
I agree.
Especially right now, where corporations are really ruling the world.
Yeah.
And it's becoming more and more prevalent, I think.
Yeah.
As there's less and less protections.
Yes. And also this notion, you know, this kind of hyper-materialism, and people think that they need all this stuff.
Yeah.
And so they work to get it. And then, but it doesn't fulfill them.
Right.
Because they're just, you know, it's a cycle.
Yeah. That's what biopolitics, yeah.
Yeah.
To work and then to consume. So you're working both ways, actually. But no, anyways, I think it's a, and I also really do think that science fiction is a really important vehicle for storytelling.
Yeah.
And I think it's really powerful because there's a separation from what's going on. So you can see things that you can't really see maybe or harder to see.
I agree.
The normal, and I think filmmakers, there should be filmmakers who are always creating science fiction.
Yeah.
And they should always exist.
Yeah, you're making me want to, because you know my next project, as you know, I don't want to say what it is.
Yeah.
Yet, maybe I can find some way to make it a science fiction film. Everyone's listening to this as a filmmaker, it's going to be going, oh my God.
Oh, yeah.
I need to make a science fiction film.
Yeah, no, I do think it's really important, powerful thing, and I think it is very difficult in some ways. I think Moon's a really very quiet film, and I don't think it's a, I mean, I'm sure there is a big budget, but not, you know, crazy budget.
Yep.
So I think it's doable. I think Doug Jones did a really great job.
I agree.
With this one.
I agree.
And I think people should, you know, I hope people see it.
Yeah. And maybe even if they see that, maybe they could do a pairing where they see that and they see 2001.
Oh, yeah. I think actually it is a really good combo.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about the 2001 has...
Yeah.
I feel like this is the less optimistic
film. Oh, yes. Film. Yeah.
This one is kind of dark. It's got a little, you know, it's kind of dark. It leaves you feeling almost like eerie and like disconnected from your own humanity. Yes. Somehow. I don't know how to... You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so it creates a really feeling. I would say 2001 Space Odyssey has a kind of, I guess it's very, it has a kind of interesting ending though, I think, a kind of bizarre ending, but I guess there's hopefulness though.
Well, I feel that that this film, Moon, is...
I think it's a child of it, though.
It takes that, it definitely is. I think it takes that final image,
yeah,
which is, you know, that person in that hotel room,
yes, yeah,
floating in space,
yeah,
just get aging.
Right, yeah.
Which is kind of, I think that's...
It's very similar.
Maybe it's the inspiration for Moon, because in a sense... It takes that concept of being kind of this, what is it to be human, you know, stuck in this kind of realm, this conceptual realm.
Right. No, that's true. And it also as a baby, kind of shows it's kind of about the cycle of life.
Yes.
The ending of it, really, about kind of beginning and ending. And I think it also leaves a lot to the imagination of what he means, what Kubrick is trying to say to us.
Yes. I mean, I have a lot of thoughts about it. We can talk about it sometime. Maybe we should do one where we select that one. Did we select that one yet? Never talked about that.
No, that one would have been the 1960s. And I think
next you can do genres.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, we
that's
can...
true. There are all kinds of interesting. I realized too, I was like, I need to select the science fiction because I think that's also really important. I've picked like dramas and comedies, but I haven't selected that one yet.
Yeah. Well, good choice, Paloma.
Yeah, and I also think I'm sure people have seen it, but I think it might be one that's a little bit less popular.
You're right.
Because I think it's a quieter film and not as flashy.
Yeah.
As some of the other ones. And I think it really does show his amazing work of everybody there. I think everybody did a really impressive job.
I agree. No, it's a very thought-provoking film. I can see why you chose. There's a lot to it, actually.
I remember
especially
thinking
when
we
talk about it.
Yeah, it's a very deep one.
I hope that our podcast inspires our listeners to... after they see a film to get together with someone and really talk about it. Because I think once you start talking about a film, you sort of discover so much from each other.
And it kind of goes
deeper and deeper and deeper.
Yeah.
As opposed to if you just watch it and just kind of go on with your day, you know.
As Christina said, you know, the audience member is part of the creation. I think part of that is talking and rehashing it, because I think thinking about cinema is very important, and you know, especially when it's something that's very thought-provoking.
So, all the filmmakers listening, if you have not yet seen Moon, now's your chance. You can see it on Netflix.
And I would welcome all our listeners to see Search History and all the other wonderful films in the program on May 25th at NFMLA's event spotlighting Asian cinema and self-determination. For more information, go to newfilmmakersla.org/events.